Hello, I'm Michel Hermagnan. This is number 0586, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0586. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actress Dee Dee Pfeiffer is one of the stars of the upcoming David E. Kelly drama on ABC and CTV called Big Sky. It's her return to TV after a 10-year hiatus to raise her boys and also go back to school, thanks to an offer from her brother-in-law, David.
In the 10 years, I was at school. I was earning my bachelor's of psych and then my master's of social work. That's what I was doing in those 10 years. And it took me a lot, 10 years, because as a single mother with two boys in tow. So I was literally minding my own business, about to get my finishing my social worker degree at UCLA, when I get a text out of nowhere from David. He texts me out of nowhere and says, "Hey, Dee, are you still acting? I have a great role for you on this new show I'm doing." I almost dropped my phone.
Craig DeLuey is the author of his latest horror story, The Children of Red Peak.
When I write horror or I find an idea that intrigues me, I look for the pain point. That's where I'm going to hurt my characters. So I tend to look for things that really scare me. Things that are very visceral for me, I think will be visceral for a lot of readers. And I like my horror to be visceral, not just the typical story of justice, the final girl, she's pure, she survives, everybody else dies horribly. And I like to go for themes and stories that are a little more psychologically disturbing, something that sticks with you like the cobwebs of a bad dream.
Sports commentator and talk show host Kate Delaney is the author of Deal Your Own Destiny.
It was such a wild journey to break the glass ceiling. I hate that term, but it's the true term, to get into the sports world. I mean, it took the 500 rejections for me to finally make it. And there was a lot of weighing of options and, geez, this is what I really want to do, but this is crazy. Is this really going to happen? And so how did I have enough wherewithal? I mean, what did I do to build up my resilience to be able to weather the ups and downs of trying to make it in what was absolutely a male-dominated field?
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0586, was Michel Hermagnan, who is a Stuff File listener here in Montreal. Thank you very much, Michelle, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Two passengers traveling together on an American Airlines flight from Dallas to Miami on October 30th were removed before taking off after one of the women attempted to sneak from coach into first class and hide in the footwell of her friend's seat. The flight had already been delayed because of a catering issue, according to a witness who said, apparently the plan was for this woman's friend to remain there for the entire flight as a stunt to drive viewers to their YouTube channel. Flight attendants discovered the plot when they noticed an empty seat in coach, and the plane returned to the gate so the friends could be removed. The witness reported an unrelated passenger was also removed after he cussed out a flight attendant over the delay. Okay, note that this story doesn't contain the names of the women or their YouTube page. That's not by my design, so essentially their hopes for YouTube glory has been thwarted. Also, in this current COVID climate, I'm a tad dismayed that they were figured out after a flight attendant noticed an empty seat in coach. One empty seat. On a flight from COVID hotspot Dallas to COVID hotspot Miami. Haven't we all seen this movie before? A thief in Lippstadt, Germany, was foiled by his own booty on October 27th as he tried to make off with a robotic lawnmower. The robot sent a message to the owner's smartphone alerting the man that it had been flipped upside down. When the owner went to investigate, he saw the thief with the robot under his arm. Police said the thief then dropped the lawnmower and fled. It's the rise of the machines. This is where it begins. Who knows where it will end? Fans of the Caledonian Thistle soccer team in Inverness, Scotland, were frustrated as they watched a broadcast of the club's October 24th game against rival Ayr United when the new robotic cameras programmed to follow the ball around the pitch focused instead on the bald head of one of the game's linesmen. The team had proudly announced a week earlier that it would be replacing human camera operators with a new system with inbuilt AI ball tracking technology to stream live HD footage of home games to season ticket holders and fans who purchased the service. While many fans complained, others saw this as a bonus, given the unusual quality of performance. It's the rise of the machines. Again, who knows where it will end. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, firefighters with Essex County England Fire and Rescue Service were called to a derelict laundromat in Epping on October 30th, where three young men had become trapped inside an industrial-sized tumble dryer. Two of them had climbed all the way into the dryer, while the third had managed to get his ankles trapped in the door. Firefighters were joined by Essex Police, a medical helicopter, and the ambulance service as they employed a lot of heavy equipment to free the men. No word on what they were looking for inside the dryer. I wonder if individually they would have come up with this harebrained scheme. You see, this is the kind of thing that happens during peer pressure or mob mentality. It's how we as a society sometimes collectively make the wrong choices in life. Or maybe, in this COVID world, these guys just miss amusement parks. Perhaps I was wrong. Maybe the rise of the machines is a good thing. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? After a 10-year absence from Hollywood, actress Dee Dee Pfeiffer is back with a role on the upcoming David E. Kelly drama Big Sky, which is set to premiere on ABC and here in Canada on CTV on November the 17th. The series is set in rural Montana, where private detectives search for two sisters who have been kidnapped by a truck driver on a remote highway. Even though the show takes place in Montana, it's actually shot in British Columbia. And Dee Dee joins us on the line right now from Vancouver. Hi, Dee Dee.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. I got to ask you right off the bat, you know, as I said in the introduction, it's been a 10-year absence. So knowing that, we all develop and change as we go on in life. What did you find different about going back to work after 10 years? And what did you find different about yourself?
Oh, wow, Peter, that's a fantastic question. I was just thinking last night, wow, have things changed? Well, and then you throw COVID in there, that really adds a whole nother level of change. But I'm very shocked at all the stuff that you guys are now doing on TV and in series, stuff that was very racy and kind of naughty and dangerous. 10 years ago, the networks weren't really doing that as much. Our show feels a little bit more like a cable show than a major network show. And for that, I was like, oh, wow, that's exciting to be part of that new change. Other than that, I think for me, I forgot how hard it was to memorize my lines being 10 years older. Like going up on lines, I was like, oh my, my memory's kind of a little shot. But other than that, I'm really excited to be back. It's really exciting time to be back, especially now because I think we need some new material on the air. I think we all need some new stuff to watch, right?
Absolutely. So you spent that time raising your kids, raising your boys. And We should mention the fact that David E. Kelly is your brother-in-law. He's married to your sister, Michelle Pfeiffer. And I'm just wondering, mm-hmm. over that 10-year period, was David saying, come on, Dee Dee, come back to work. Come on.
Oh, you know, it's so funny because we have a really tight and loving family. We are really close. At the same time, we don't talk shop. We are so weird. Like, I find out that Michelle and David are doing a series or a movie through other people. And it's not social media because I don't do social media. I don't watch TV. I don't go to movies. So, no, that's not what happened. And actually, I forgot to say, in the 10 years, I was at school. I was earning my my AA, my bachelor's of psych, and then my master's of social work. That's what I was doing in those 10 years. And it took me a lot, 10 years, because as a single mother with two boys in tow, it took me a long time, you know, and I didn't even know how to write a term paper. I didn't know how to do anything. So I had a lot of prerequisites when I started. I was, let's just say, a lot less educated than a fifth grader, like a lot less. So that's what I was doing. I was on a different course. I was going to become something that was going to help social welfare issues and people in need. So I was literally minding my own business, about to get finishing my social worker degree at UCLA, when I get a text out of nowhere from David, because we don't text. I mean, we see each other on the holidays, and I love him, he loves me, but that's it, right? We, you know, and my sister and I always talk about other things. He texts me out of nowhere and says, "Hey, Dee, are you still acting? I have a great role for you on this new show I'm doing." I almost dropped my phone. I think, yeah, I stood there for I don't know how long, stunned, shocked, and was like, I read it, and I went, someone slapped me, because, yeah. So I immediately text back, yes, with the yes, E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-S-S-S. And I got to tell you, even right now, I'm still very taken back and in shock and so grateful, and it couldn't have come at a better time for me. I mean, I'm 56, not a lot of roles for us in, you know, on this side of 50, right? And in an industry that's hurting, not a lot of people are working, and our country, a lot of people are out of work. So, and I literally was finishing a degree in social work where they make no money. And I was raising these two boys, so I wasn't sure how I was going to cut it. David didn't even know any of that. It was like this Mother Earth decided to throw me a bone, like saying, let's help this woman out, you know? And it was just a fluke that he happened to have this great role for me at a time where, he didn't even know I needed it. Well, so that, yeah. Right. Who would have ever thought that happened?
Well, one of the reasons I asked what was different about you, over the 10-year period, besides just raising the boys, is I knew you got your bachelor's degree in psychology. And I was just wondering if studying psychology has enhanced or affected the way you approach a role.
Oh my God, yes. You know, it's so funny because my psych degree gave me a level of education on human behavior, just to add to what I already knew, because I was already really interested in that, but it fine-tuned that. But honestly, I got to say, I think it was really more my master's of social work, because social workers are educated, at least the education we got at UCLA, worked on a macro, meso, and micro level. We have education on a policy level, macro, like policy. How does policy affect communities, right? And then meso, those communities, how do they intersect and work with the community? And then individual, when it comes to human behavior, different treatment plans, addiction, mental illness, of course, yes, children abuse, elderly abuse. We literally, the education is off the map. So I came back to acting with so much information. And I got to say, I still look through life through a social worker's lens, which is different than the way I was acting before. So what's so nice with this role I'm playing is I'm able to give Denise a lot of these qualities that maybe a social worker would have. Denise does not have the education I do, but I'm certainly giving her those characteristics of looking at people with compassion, coming to where they're at, staying in my lane, really using hard listening, humor when it's effective to try to lighten a moment so people can breathe through it, lean into it. All these things that I learned with my clients, working with the Department of Mental Health and those with addiction and mental illness and experiencing homelessness, which is my area of concentration, I'm able to use that in this show with the characters when they come in. And so I'm so grateful and proud to say, wow, I'm able to blend my education with my career and bring it up to another level, you know,
right,
that I didn't have before. And that's exciting. And I have every intention, by the way, I'm jumping all over the place here, but I have every intention of not letting my degree just, you know, weigh on the sideline. I'm going to, at some point, blend my degree and my passion for human welfare and addiction and mental illness and those experiencing homelessness, blend that together with my beautiful and so loyal fan base and find a way to help on another level.
Well, it sounds like future Dee Dee Pfeiffer is getting a talk show at some point. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, wouldn't that be something? Maybe you and I could do it together.
A daytime talk show. That sounds like something that would be perfect for you. Now, as I mentioned to you earlier off air, a fan of yours since the television show Sybil, where you played on that show for several seasons. Also a fan of yours from For Your Love. So even though I've seen you do a lot of dramatic work, I know you mostly from comedy. And the one thing that's always interesting about a David E. Kelly drama is there's always room for a little laughter within the roles that he creates. So tell us about the show Big Sky and the role that you play.
Well, this is definitely a quirky show. And I love Denise because she's exactly that. She is that little, because this is a crazy show. This is a journey, man. You're going to feel like after that hour that you went on a wild ride and you're lucky that you buckled up and can't wait for the next episode to come to see what's going to happen next. Denise gives you that moment of a chuckle or a laughter or a smile on a wild ride. Denise is very much that. So yes, my ability with comedy definitely is kicking in, but I got to really admit my truth. It's funny because there's comedy like For Your Love and Sybil, right? Which is, you go for that joke. And then there's, if you underplay it, then it's not funny at all, right? It's called tanking the joke. So Denise, I have to walk a fine line between not overplaying it or underplaying it, right? It has to be that kind of level of humor that just fits perfect. So for me, hopefully if I do it right, it'll look like it's effortless, but it's work because I don't want to, I just have to bring that level of tricky humor is what I like to call it, tricky humor. And my ability to be able to laugh in the face of things that are kind of messed up. Like one thing I have always done is that life is painful, man. Life throws, can we cuss on the show? Let's just say life throws you some balls that don't smell very pretty. you know what I really want to say. Because I have such a mouth on me. But, you know, like I said to my boys, it's not about life not throwing those stinky balls at you. That's going to happen. It's how you deal with it, right? So I find humor often sometimes is the way to deal with it. Not laughing it off, right? That's different than laughing through it. Like, oh, I'm going to deal with this, but I'm going to laugh through it. So that's Denise for sure.
How old are your boys now?
Oh, my God. Funny you mentioned that. Oh, while here in Canada, I'm not able to go home because of the schedule of quarantine. My youngest one just turned 15 2 days ago. And my oldest one turned 18 in June. So they're there by themselves being all big boys with the animals and holding down the fort. Yeah.
Are they excited? Again, since you took so much time off, they grew up knowing you as mom and a student. So are they excited at the fact that they're going to get to see mom in something new and fresh on TV?
You know, they're teenagers, so they're weird. It's like so funny. I was like, guys, look, I'm going to be working on Uncle David's show. I'm going to go back on the air. Can you believe it? I really thought I'd walked away from it, but I've got this new introduction to it. And they're like, yeah, Mom, listen, can we get Domino's tonight? And make sure my side doesn't have mushrooms on it. Max likes it. Whoa, did you hear what I just said? Yeah, that's cool. Anyways, there's a video game I really want to get. They're like so teenagers. I don't think they understand the magnitude of like, your mom's going to be on TV. They're very busy being teenagers. You know, there's really important stuff that they do that's much more important than mom getting a gig. I can tell you one thing. They feel it that I'm gone. Because mom is not making breakfast anymore. Mom's not going grocery shopping. That's how it's really hit them the most is I'm not there to help them out, clean the litter box and take the dogs for a walk. And, you know, yeah. So they are excited, though. They're just very humble. They're humble boys. They're funny.
Well, I'm sure they'll be more excited when you're walking that red carpet for that Emmy.
Yeah. Well, I guess if we're going to be zooming the red carpet, they're going to have to, right? Because my Lord, COVID. Well, maybe we could do a red carpet here in Canada, because you guys certainly are getting things under control here. But yeah, maybe I'll have to drag them with me. Braxton doesn't even remember. I brought Braxton as a young child to a red carpet. He has no memory of it. And both boys have been on the set as children. Braxton even yelled action. Oh, it was here in Canada. I was working on a Lifetime movie, and Braxton yelled action on the set. It was actually very cute. He has no memory of it, though. Mm. Yeah.
Well, continued success. Nice to have you back. Looking forward to Big Sky when it premieres on both CTV and ABC on November 17th. Thank you very much, Dee Dee, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Have a beautiful day.
Now, there's a woman who is a complete ray of sunshine. That's Dee Dee Pfeiffer, one of the stars of ABC's Big Sky, which goes on the air on both ABC and CTV on November 17th. Check your local listings. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to horror writer Craig DeLuey. Plus, Kate Delaney is the author of Deal Your Own Destiny. She'll be back on the program. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and plenty of Stuff File news still to come your way here on the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, several days before Halloween, the Oregon Health Authority did a Facebook Live video with trick-or-treat safety tips. But before Dr. Claire Pochet got to those details for the kids, she wanted to report 390 new cases of COVID-19. And as she stated, sadly, we are also reporting 3 more deaths today. The problem, she was delivering the news wearing clown makeup, which is not even referenced to in the video until several minutes later. "I'm sorry," tweeted Portland, Oregonian editor Samantha Swindler, "but who at the Oregon Health Authority thought this was a good idea?" Finally, 12 minutes in, Dr. Pochet referenced her makeup. She said, "As for me, we clowns kind of took a backseat to Halloween. But I'm hoping to bring us back as the fun-loving and happy clowns that we have always been." Wow. And you wonder why and how kids can grow up to be afraid of clowns. And by the way, I've posted her picture on the Stuff File program fan page on Facebook and also on my Twitter page if you want to take a look. I'm also reminded of those sage words first sung by Dick Van Dyke on Broadway in Bye Bye Birdie. "Gray skies are gonna clear up. Put on a happy face." Angela Neva has had a lot of fun with her Halloween display this year. "We just really had a good time changing the scene up every night," she said. "Every night we change the positions of the skeletons, and it's really been just a great creative outlet for me." Her Richmond, Texas Homeowners Association disagreed. In other words, they had a bone to pick with her. They sent her a letter describing the skeletons as offensively positioned and told her to remove the decorations. That may have come from the fact that Neva's display is, as she put it, modeled after an adult club, with pole dancing skeletons, a VIP section, DJ, and patrons who move every night. Neva says she's had no complaints until the HOA letter arrived. "My neighbors love it." The letter arrived 6 days before Halloween, and required her to comply within 30 days. She agreed to comply after Halloween. So, let me get this straight. Depicting scenes that feature supposedly fleshless post-death humans, no problem. Having them look like strippers, red flag. You know, that's like complaining about the decor of Jeffrey Dahmer's kitchen. Yeah. With so many licensed owners, gun accidents aren't unusual in the state of Texas, but having a person injured by their dog opening fire on them is something new. According to police, the shooting happened recently in Plano when the unidentified man picked up his dog while wearing a pistol tucked in his waistband. The dog's paw somehow got caught on the trigger and the pistol fired. The bullet hit the owner in the thigh. The shot reportedly went straight through the leg and didn't cause a lot of damage. The owner will fully recover. You know, with a dog, you know this is merely an accident. With a cat, however, it would have been premeditated. You know cats are evil, right? Little pieces of evil plotting against mankind. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Folks, just in case some of you didn't know, the company that can rent you a moving van or a hitch is called U-Haul. It is not called U-Keep. An Altoona, Pennsylvania woman is facing charges after she failed to return a U-Haul for more than 40 days. Police report that 37-year-old Donna Kolobov was arrested and charged on November the 3rd after the owner of a U-Haul called to file a report of a stolen van. Kolobov had rented the van on September 21st and paid a deposit of $90. She reportedly failed to return the van on September 23rd and allegedly changed her phone number and moved. U-Haul was unable to contact her at this point. They called police on the 41st day to file a report. The van was found when they contacted a family member and saw the van pull in behind the house and park. Kolobov was taken into custody. The victim assessed the mileage and the damage. The amount owed totaled $4,000, while the damage to the roof of the van would be assessed at a later date. Kolobov is facing charges of theft of a motor vehicle and theft of services. Well, she now has another move in her life, but this one the state will pay for. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Craig DeLuey is back on the show. Last year, we had him on talking about his dystopian thriller called Our War. This time around, he's here to talk about his new book called The Children of Red Peak, which deals with the survivors of a doomsday cult. Craig joins us via Skype from Calgary. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Peter. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you back on the program with us. Now, to be honest, going to your website, Craig, and looking at some of the titles and the synopsis of your book has me a bit concerned.
Okay.
Last year we talked about your book, Our War, and that story is a brother and sister become child soldiers fighting on opposite sides of a second American Civil War. Then there's another book, Suffer the Children. A mysterious disease strikes down the world's children before bringing them back with a bizarre need that might end the world. Then there's One of Us. When a disease produces a generation of monsters, these children must somehow fit in or fight for what's theirs. And of course, there's the current book, which we're about to talk about, The Children of Red Peak, which leads me to ask this question, Craig. Please point out on the doll where someone hurt you.
I figured the question was going to have something to do with me being messed up. I don't know. You know, when I write horror, I find an idea that intrigues me, I look for the pain point. That's where I'm going to hurt my characters. So the place on the doll is the characters. That's where I'm hurting. With horror, I tend to look for things that, you know, really scare me. And So the things that scare me are, you know, things going wrong in the world, like in our war, or something bad happening to my family, like in Suffer the Children. So those are the things I tend to explore. Things that are very visceral for me, I think will be visceral for a lot of readers. And I like my horror to be visceral, not just the typical story of justice, the final girl, she's pure, she survives, everybody else dies horribly. At the end, everything happens the way it's expected or supposed to. I like to go for the unexpected. I like to go for something that's a lot more visceral. And I like to go for things that themes and stories that are a little more psychologically disturbing, something that sticks with you like the cobwebs of a bad dream. And to me, that's more challenging and powerful than the typical, formulaic approach.
Well, again, not to do a deep psychological dive into your life, I'm just curious to know, as someone who is a writer, what types of things did you, as a kid, like to read? Did you like to read horror stories? Did you like to be scared? Were you into that kind of thing when you were growing up, or was that something that developed later?
It was something that developed later. When I was young, I just wanted to escape, right? So I grew up on a farm outside of a small town in New Jersey, and, there wasn't much of a life of the mind, or I was bored, actually, so I pursued a life of the mind, and so I found it in fiction. I discovered Robert E. Howard. I fell in love with the Conan series. I fell in love with everything that guy wrote. He was very pulpy, fun, wish fulfillment type of stuff. Perfect for, a teenage boy. And I absolutely fell in love with him. It made me want to be a writer, which took me on a very long journey through the 90s, banging my, banging on the door like I was in Kafka's The Castle. I felt like I was invited to a party I wasn't allowed to enter. I kept trying to get published with big publishers, and agents couldn't get through the slush pile. In the early noughties, ended up with a small press, published a couple books. They did well for small press, but not great. But then a couple things happened. One was I wrote a zombie book at the right – so I had a book at the right place at the right time for the right audience. And e-books became really big, which – took small press from the margins and right into the center of publishing as incubators of books and publishers of great fiction you couldn't get from the big guys. And so suddenly that all exploded for me, and that took me into the horror genre. And now I love the horror genre, though, because it was a natural for me, because I love speculative fiction. I love ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances, and where you can push them to the limit and really find out what's at the heart of their humanity and what they're really made of. And a lot of it, the stuff I write tends to be apocalyptic, because I also just absolutely love the zeitgeist of, the poop hitting the fan, but it's happening on a global scale. So this is something that's happening to all of us together. And I think that was shaped, if we're going to psychoanalyze, I think that was shaped by my experiences on 9/11 to a large extent, which was pretty a traumatic day for me. I lived in New York, and my wife was in one of the buildings, and she got out, but barely. There were a number of hours I actually thought she was gone. And so that made quite an impression on me. And a lot of my fiction tends to recapture that feeling, that moment, because it was so powerful. It happened to all of us, and my particular experience was pretty powerful, and I bring a lot of that to what I write.
Wow. So tell us about the new book, The Children of Red Peak. What's that about?
It's a psychological and cosmic horror story. So psychological being horror found in, the human condition, and cosmic horror being horror found in an existential dread and a mystery, things we don't understand that are bigger and much more powerful than us. So it's a psychological and cosmic horror story. It's about a group of people who grew up in an apocalyptic cult. They survived its horrific last days. One of them commits suicide, and the other survivors reunite to confront their past and the entity that appeared on the final night. So it's told in two timelines, one where we see the kids growing up in the group and how everything goes wrong, and the other years later as adults where they're coping with trauma and ultimately trying to find closure on the tragedy. Has a bit of a literary take, like a lot of my books. So there are some big ideas here. Thematically, it's about faith, family, and the fine line between belief and delusion, delusion that ultimately proves dangerous. The book comes out November 17th from Hachette, and it'll be available in physical and online bookstores. And the audio rights were recently acquired by Dreamscape.
Wow. So when you are writing a book like this, do you ever envision beyond an audiobook, what this would be like either on the big or the small screen?
Yeah, that's a from your lips to God's ears question. situation. That's the common writer's fantasy, right? That their book will be adapted because it really is a game changer career-wise, and it'd just be really fun, and it'd be great to see someone interpret your work that way. I do get to enjoy that with the audiobooks. When I listen to my books, you have to proof them. They're really enjoyable. You really get to see an artist's interpretation of your work, and it's a lot of fun. You almost get to experience your own book as if you were a reader, you know, reading it for the first time. As far as screen adaptation, that's something that, you know, lives in the land of hopes and dreams. The odds of your book getting made into a film or TV show are about the same as a wind passing through a junkyard and leaving behind a plane. You can fly to your land of hopes and dreams. I've had lots of bites over the years, and it's fun. You know, it's really fun to engage with that world, even though it's a really wacky world. It's a world where you hear constant yeses until you're told a no. Whereas book publishing is very different. It's much more grim. You hear no's until you hear that final yes. And so it's a very different world, and it's a lot of fun. Where I tend to, quote, screen adapt my book is in imagination. While I'm writing the book, I tend to dream the book, so to speak, in the shower, behind the wheel in a car. When I'm about to fall asleep, I'll picture scenes in my head, and I don't cast them with actors, but I do. I'm constantly dreaming the book and bringing it to life in my imagination so I can write it as realistically and as authentically as I can.
Well, if you're always constantly dreaming the book and it's with you in your waking moments, not just when you're sitting down and writing it, since you do write some things that are rather dystopian or horrific or dark, what do you do to remove yourself from the process during your downtime so that you can enjoy life rather than being immersed in whatever project you're working on?
Well, by exploring the fantasy, I do escape the reality. I mean, the things that really scare me are things like existential dread for myself, my kids, my species with climate change. And so when I write, I'm escaping the horrors of the real world. And so it's very cathartic, and it's fun, just the way people read horror fiction. You know, you could ask the same question of horror readers, and they'll probably tell you the same thing. I read as a cathartic release from the very real world problems and horrors that I have to face. And so, I absolutely enjoy it for that. But I think that when I'm writing it, yeah, you do have to really immerse yourself in it. But, you know, it's like an actor acting. You act. You put yourself into the character's head. You have their motivations. You say, okay, go. What would I do in this situation? Instead of being a script, you're sort of creating it on the fly. You're improvising as an actor, really, when you're writing a story. And so, it can get pretty grim because the characters, you fall in love with your characters, and you have to inflict pain on them to see what they're made of. And you hate doing that in a way, but it's part of the job. Everyone understands, from your characters to you as the writer, it's part of the mission of the creative work, and you make it happen. And in the end, everyone wins.
Mm. And the latest book is entitled The Children of Red Peak. Craig, I thank you once again for being on the program with us. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Peter, it's always a delight to talk to you. Thanks again for having me.
Craig DeLuey. author of The Children of Red Peak. You can go to my website at thestuffwild.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0586, and you'll find links to Craig's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Kate Delaney, author of Deal Your Own Destiny. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And a few more Stuff File news stories here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, just to name a few. You can find buttons for Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio right on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the stuff. During the recent election in the U.S., a man stepped up to an election worker in Orlando, Florida, and asked for a ballot. When he was asked for his ID, he said it wasn't for him, it was for his wife. She was in the car, and they were on the way to the hospital. The woman was in labor and wouldn't let him take her to the hospital until she had voted. Election officer Karen Gonzalez raced an absentee ballot out to the car, figuring the woman would show her ID, grab the ballot, and continue to the hospital. But the woman in labor filled out her ballot while doing a little controlled breathing. Once Gonzalez accepted the completed ballot, the unnamed woman allowed her husband to continue to the hospital. Now, at press time, we don't know what she had, a boy, a girl, a Democrat, a Republican, an independent, no idea. Whatever it is, mom's going to hang the details of their birth in annoying stories for the rest of that kid's natural life. Heck, it'll even be part of the toast at their wedding, I'm sure. And New Yorker Leonard Shoulder's walk to a Bronx bus stop was perfectly normal until the sidewalk went out from under him. Then his personal space became a lot more crowded. Rats crawling on him. He couldn't move, said Greg White, his brother. He didn't want to yell because he was afraid there were going to be rats inside his mouth. It took half an hour for firefighters to get him out of the underground vault he'd fallen into. And then he left on a stretcher instead of the bus. His head and arm had been injured. I think he broke his arm, as a matter of fact. Later, the Shoulders family started referring journalists to a lawyer because there might be a case to file. You figure? Across New York City, sidewalk collapses have been reported more than 30 times since mid-2019. Just something else that New Yorkers can add to their 2020 bingo cards. Yikes. Anyway, let's get to our last guest on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Back in August, we talked to sports commentator and talk show host Kate Delaney about how the pandemic was affecting pro sports. Kate is also the author of Deal Your Own Destiny, and at the time I said that we have to have her back on the show to talk about her book. Well, that time is now. So Kate joins us via Skype from Texas. Hi, Kate.
Oh, great to be on with you, as always.
Great to have you on the program again. As I said, we promised to talk about your book the last time you were on. We got mired into the sports world. So let's talk about your book, Deal Your Own Destiny. What made you write this book, and what was going on in your life at the time that you said, I need to write this book?
Such a great question, because it was such a wild journey to break the glass ceiling. I hate that term, but it's the true term, to get into the sports world. I mean, it took the 500 rejections for me to finally make it. And there was a lot of weighing of options and, geez, this is what I really want to do, but this is crazy. Is this really going to happen? And so how did I have enough wherewithal? I mean, what did I do to build up my resilience to be able to weather the ups and downs of trying to make it in was what was absolutely a male dominated field? And there were plenty of men that were helping me, Pete, but they just weren't the gatekeepers. And I just filled my mind with the things that made it work and talked to the right people to try to get that inspiration. I dug deep and I kept trying to tweak things and finally did it. So I thought, I know there's other people out there that get dissuaded from what they really want to do. They get knocked off the dime of not doing what they think their destiny is. And I think it's a shame when people have to look over their shoulder, because that idea that you didn't do what you thought you should really do and that disappointment living with that has to be tough.
I'm curious to know if during the time you were going through the struggle, were you aware of the struggle? And the reason why I ask that, there's a similarity between you and myself. I grew up as someone who wanted to be a broadcaster. And certainly up here in Canada, when I wanted to be a broadcaster, there were no blacks. And it just never crossed my mind that it wasn't a possibility for me to be a broadcaster. And that's the route I took, even though people tried to talk me out of it. It just never crossed my mind that I couldn't do it. And then I look back and I realize, well, I kind of blazed a certain kind of trail. Did you realize that? In other words, during your struggle, did you realize it was a struggle, or did you only realize that after you had succeeded?
No, I'm exactly like you. I just wanted to make it happen, and I didn't think it wasn't going to happen, even though there was the ups and downs and dealing with it. But I assumed, yeah, I can do this. Absolutely. And so I'm not going to do something else. I'm going to keep pursuing this. And I didn't realize it was a struggle in that sense. No.
So what was the biggest challenge for you? The fact that you were a woman in broadcasting, or a woman in sports broadcasting? Because that's like a double layer.
It was a double layer, because there were blocks for being a woman just in general, but definitely the sports layer was the biggest one, because there would be a lot of lip service about, oh, we really want to hire great qualified women, but that wasn't really true. And as one news director put it to me, because I was looking for TV and radio jobs, he sent me, you know, on letterhead, sent me an actual rejection letter where he said, I think you're attractive, you have a great voice, but women should not go into the locker room. They don't belong in the sports world. And they're more suited for easy, breezy morning shows. You should go into a morning show somewhere and you could probably have a nice life.
You know, again, the parallels between us are fascinating. And the only reason I say that is when I finally got into broadcasting, people assumed that I should go into sports, and I stayed away from it because that was the only place that black males usually ended up. And I purposely stayed away from that.
Because that's so interesting, because you're right. So that would just be like, oh, of course, well, that's you must be a sports broadcaster. That's ridiculous, huh?
Yeah. So I stayed away from it my entire career.
Oh, we're like bookends.
Exactly. So again, you had this successful career. You've now decided to write this book. Who are you writing it for? And I ask that question because do you feel that the road or the path for a younger, new Kate Delaney starting up is different than the one you traveled?
Oh, I think the path is definitely different, but I still think that it is full of potholes because now more than ever, there's so much competition and what you have to be creative at doing and who would take a chance on you. It's still the same thing, especially in radio, not as much in television, although I think that still exists, but definitely in radio, because you got to think, Pete, I'm doing a talk show. So that means I have to get ratings and really affiliates. And so people have to be drawn to what I'm saying, what I'm talking about. And doing it solo, even if you have guests on, which of course I do, just like you, but, you know, doing your own show, it's still, there's very few women that have their own radio shows, especially syndicated.
Why do you think that still is today?
Because I think the people that run the networks, a lot of them don't feel a woman can carry a show. I don't know that they would voice that. That would be the wrong time to say it now in the era of Me Too. But I do believe that there is some thought to that, that there's only a certain audience you can get. And, oh, men won't listen to a woman talking about sports. But I didn't find that. I found that I got a lot of support from men. And I got ratings where I went. And of course, that was the name of the game. We know what the business is. And I did what you needed to do in the business and got to know players and did the things that I think people wanted to hear. And so they tuned in.
Is there a certain amount of conditioning within the hierarchy of broadcasting? And the reason why I ask that question, yes, there are people who believe that that a woman can't do a particular job in a radio station, such as doing sports. But there are women who are in management positions, and sometimes you might actually find women who also believe that thought.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that. And again, this is something that you're not going to get very many people to say, but I think that it's true that there would be women that would probably do the same thing and say, oh, well, you know, it's all guys. Because if you look, I mean, all you have to do for anyone listening to us is just, you know, we have the Google machines or whatever machine you use to look things up and just start to look around at how many females there are. And you'll see there just really isn't that many. It doesn't mean there's none, but there really aren't very many.
Yeah. Yet when I go to television, and again, since we're talking about the world of sports that you work in, I can't imagine this day and age of watching a nationally televised football game where I do not see women on the sideline or on the anchor desk. And I remember a time when that just wasn't the case.
You know, absolutely. I mean, you go back to the 70s and Phyllis George, who I want to say she passed away maybe 6 months ago. She was really one of those breakthrough people that when we just had a handful of channels and she was on CBS. But, you know, she was one of the first people women to be in that position. But, you know, you didn't see very many at all.
Because of your particular journey, I would assume your book is very important for young girls out there to read, but is it also important for young boys?
Oh, I think it's equally, it's men and women. And I don't think it's necessarily geared just to young people. I have a quote in the book where I say, George Eliot says it's never too late to be who you might have been. So in my book, which Forbes came to me and they said they wanted to do my story, so they published it. And the book is for anyone who wants to be the dealer in their life and they don't want to go down the path that everybody's telling them to take. So I talk about the journeys of, you know, rock stars in sports and in business and in general in life and people who influenced me and what you can learn from that. And then serious takeaways on what to do. How can you do it? How can you get there? Giving you a roadmap that if you follow this, you have a great chance to deal your own destiny.
Well, congratulations with all your success and congratulations for putting out this book. As you just described, I'm sure it'll be a great help to everyone. The book is called Deal Your Own Destiny. Kate, I thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Peter, always a pleasure to be on with you.
Sports commentator and talk show host Kate Delaney. Again, her book is Deal Your Own Destiny. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0586, and you'll find links to Kate's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
50-year-old Dwight Turner is suing the owner of a backyard animal sanctuary in Davie, Florida, after the full contact encounter with a black leopard that he paid $150 for turned into a mauling. Investigators said sanctuary owner Michael Poggi sold Turner time with the leopard to play with it, rub its belly, and take pictures on August 31st, but the leopard attacked as soon as Turner entered its enclosure, leaving his scalp hanging from his head. I'm guessing a look inside his head showed nothing. Authorities said Poggi is licensed to have the leopard, but he has been cited by Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation for allowing the contact and for maintaining captive wildlife in unsafe conditions. Okay, there's a lot that can be said about Michael and his animal sanctuary, but that's an issue for another day. I want to discuss Dwight, who had a little bit taken off the top. Why? Oh, why? Would you think it's a good idea to pay $150 for a full contact experience with a leopard, and when it goes bad, your first thought isn't to take responsibility for a dumb move, but rather to sue? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0586. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0586. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, Verdant Square Radio, KDXRadio.com, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, CKUW-FM in Winnipeg, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. If you were to play this episode backwards, any given this... Go ahead, try and figure that out.